Welcome to Radio Mojo Plus, brought to you by Pyology Pizzeria and by Southern Glaciers Wines and Spirits, proud supporters of the food and beverage industry in Hawaii.
Good morning and welcome to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Jo McGarry, plus Bobby Curran, here to bring you the best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. And we're only in January. I don't know. This is our second show, so it can't even be the 14th. Maybe it's the 14th of January this morning. And it's just flying by, Bobby. I just can't even believe how quickly January is speeding by. And partly it's because there's so much going on. So I know there's so much going on in the sports world. There's so much going on in the restaurant world, considering we're still heavily in the middle of a pandemic. It's very exciting. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on. It's like double-double this weekend, isn't it? Double headers, NFL, double UH basketball.
Right. There's a lot of, and not to mention, above all of this stuff is the whole deal with where the University of Hawaii football team is going to play next year. That is really a big topic.
That's a really worrying, like, knot in your stomach. The implications are so huge kind of a topic, isn't it?
It is. I still think that even though there's been a little tension lately, especially with UH's announcement about what they want, that I think a lot of people felt, why are they doing that publicly? Why aren't we talking privately? I think it's been really the result of a number of years, but I still think, I know there's people that will disagree with me, even some on campus, that think it's great to play at Ching Field. I'm not sure that's true. I just think the best solution still to me is to fix up as much as you need to the lower bowl at Aloha Stadium and play there until you get the new stadium. I just think it's more seats. It's going to be, in many ways, not the logistical problems that you're going to have if you try to do this at Ching Field.
So, and not just logistical, right? Not just the fact that getting people just, you know, egress,
in and out. Well,
ingress.
It's also safety.
That seems so hard.
I mean, you're going to put up temporary bleachers seating 12,000 to 13,000 people. You imagine the liability issues there? I just think some of this is, I know, I get it, they want to engage students and all that thing, but the loss in revenue, because this team's going to be good enough to draw 20 to 25,000, and you're no way you're going to get that many on campus. So
does it also do something to the program? I hope this isn't a stupid question, but does it also do something like making it appear like it's very much smaller time because you're in that kind of like just playing on a field, you know, on your campus? Or does that not really come into it?
Well, you know, I
mean, if you're a recruit, if you're looking to somebody for next year,
that is
and they're looking at your field.
Right. As somebody pointed out, I think it was it Ferd or Steve? I think it was Ferd, who had just said, let's say you're recruiting someone from Todd Graham's old high school where he coached, Allen High School. And you bring that recruit in, and he's going to look at you and say, my high school
has
4,000 more seats and way better ones than you're showing me here.
Right.
I just think when you look at even in the conference, I mean, you look at a Colorado State or Boise State or some of the other facilities are way beyond, I mean, are not in the same class. They're in the stratosphere compared to Ching Field. I just think over 3 years that can do some
damage.
That no matter how good the coaches are, how good they sell it, I think that's tough. Kids care about facilities. They care about where they're eating and where they're sleeping and where they're working out and where they're playing. They care about those things.
I wonder if anybody has done a financial study on the true cost of it. Because when a restaurant closes, I'm just going to use the best analogy for me. When a restaurant closes, you know, people on the outside, they just see a restaurant closing and they're like, oh, well, I wonder who's going to open in that space next. What happens behind the scenes is one restaurant closure, say in an average shopping mall of an averagely small-sized restaurant of about 1,200 square feet, can cost a landlord $1 million in between a year and a year and a half. And that's an absolute fact. because the cost of it being empty, the cost of having to find someone else, the cost of repairs, the cost of just everything,
sometimes
the
build-outs,
negative
yeah.
rent, you know, no, it's not just that it's empty, it's that not only do you not have rent coming in, you have to pay so much more to get someone to come in and start paying you rent. All of those costs, when you add them up, are phenomenal. I'm wondering if anyone has actually looked at the cost of that, like just the cost of not getting in good recruits, 3 years from now having a really poor-ish or not as good football team, not having the people wanting to go and spend the money. It surely it's a phenomenal cost.
It is a phenomenal cost, but there are people that could make an argument that you would be countered by what you were able to accomplish by having an on-campus thing where students could walk, where you could create a different deal with the student body. I get that. I get why that's attractive. But I also think it's at great risk. Not to mention just some of the things that you'd have to put up, especially the temporary nature of what you're going to put up. I mean, I worry about that just from a safety issue. I mean, temporary bleachers for 12,000 people? My goodness.
It doesn't. The word temporary and 12,000 people doesn't sort of go together.
No,
very
it doesn't.
Well,
I agree. I think that's my issue. I just think, and they might say, well, I don't think this has been properly explored and done in a level-headed manner with everyone concerned on trying to get Aloha Stadium to change its mind on doing that lower bowl. That's my opinion, and I, you know, it won't be everybody's.
And what? Well, it's not like people have always agreed with you throughout your career. I mean, no. It's nothing new
but if,
to be
if nothing else,
a voice of reason if and not, a bit
right,
controversial.
If nothing else, I'm sensible on stuff.
Yeah, you're very sensible. But here's the thing: I also am wondering about does the public have any input in this? I mean, does the public opinion matter or not in any way whatsoever? It seems like it should really.
Well, I think it does, but it's maybe not as direct a result. I don't think it's like somebody writing a letter to someone in the stadium authority or to David Lastner or David Matlin. I don't think it's as simple as that in terms of making. But people vote with their feet.
Yeah.
People vote. By they'll give you their vote by whether or not they'll show up to Ching Field and say, all right, we don't mind that there's limited parking and that many of us are going to have to walk in from God knows where. You know, we don't mind. I mean, listen, in Alabama, they walk 2.5 miles to get to the stadium every
Alabama.
Week. Right? Yes, it is.
Those people are a little different, I think. In a very good way. But, yeah, to me it's like, you know, you wouldn't build a restaurant and spend millions of dollars on it and not be very sure about the menu or the chef
right.
or
and so I
knowing
think
if people will come. You wouldn't do it.
Is your question, what you're sort of saying, it seems to me, is like, do they have data on this?
Yeah.
Is there anything that's
so
hard
in that.
Data mm-hmm. on who will come, how much it will cost, number one, what will be the long-term effects? Who is going to show up?
Yes. That's what I would
want to
see.
What will your conference think?
Yes.
You know, there's other issues here.
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of searching for is where are all the other things that if you were running any other kind of business, you would have to produce before you were able to move forward with any kind of authority or, you know, permission. And maybe it is out there, but I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the data. And you can get data on everything and anything
now.
No
question. There's no doubt you can get it. They may have it, and I've chosen not to release it.
Well, they should share it because it's important.
Right. Well, we don't know exactly. I don't know enough yet. I don't have enough facts. I do have some that I'm not even disclosing.
Yes.
But
I'm saying yes like I know, but I don't.
Right. I haven't even gotten to this with you, but I had long conversations in the last couple of days about it. So I think there's a lot of stakeholders in the community that are paying very close attention to all of this.
Yep, it certainly is an ongoing, very big problem, and one that started off the year with a ton of controversy, came right
Good
out
question.
Of the blue, shocked very many people, and obviously we'll all be very involved in following it closely. Well, I hate to change the subject, but I'm so excited this morning because We are going to, well, we have two interviews today, and I'm excited about both of them. One of them's with Dylan Busterbaugh from the Manoa Chocolate Company, because they made this whiskey chocolate bar, and I love it, and I just want people to know about it and go and buy it.
It's a whiskey chocolate bar?
It's a whiskey chocolate bar. So it's Manoa Chocolate Company did this wonderful collaboration with Old Polly Road Whiskey, where they combined their talents, and they've actually made something that is really quite fantastic. And I think it's actually good for you. When I first came to America, people told me you can't say on the radio that things are good for you, so I'm saying it in inverted commas. But I think the combination of this excellent high-quality dark chocolate with a tiny, tiny wee bit in there of good old whiskey is really good. So we're going to talk about that, which is fun coming up. But coming up right after this break, we're going to go to Maui to talk to Chef Sheldon Simeon, who is the founder, owner of the phenomenally successful Tin Roof. He has a new cookbook coming out in March. And we're so lucky this morning, Bobby, because we have a digital copy of the cookbook, which I have immersed myself in over the past couple of days. I'm going to make a super bold statement. This is an award-winning cookbook. You are going to see this cookbook winning awards, like perhaps even James Beard Best Cookbook Award.
Boy.
I know I'm really out there this morning, but I believe in it 100%. It's gorgeous. And it's not just the photographs and the recipes. Sheldon Simeon has captured the food of Hawaii in a way I've never seen before. It's absolutely stunning. So do not leave. Usually we say, well, we know you have to get out your cars, or we know you're busy at work. Don't. Stay where you are. A quick break. When we come back, Chef Sheldon Simeon is going to join us to talk about his wonderful new cookbook and more. Stay with us. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
This is Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu.
Welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. So nice to have you with us on this gorgeous, slightly rainy Thursday morning. I'm Joe McGarry. We do this every Thursday, bring you the best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. And we're really bringing you the best this morning because a new cookbook is about to hit the shores. It's going to hit everywhere, not until the end of March, but we got a sneak preview of this beautiful book by Chef Sheldon Simeon, of course, the very famous and much loved owner of Tin Roof on Maui and more. And he's joining us this morning. Good morning, Chef. How are you?
Good morning, Jill. Good morning. Great to be here.
Oh, it's so nice to hear your voice. Thank you for taking the time with us. I know that things are kind of busy for you nowadays.
Yeah, busy, you know. It's trying to focus on running a restaurant in these tough times, but blessed nonetheless to have our doors open.
It has been a really difficult time for everybody. I mean, the restaurant industry, it's widely documented that two things have happened. One, it's been incredibly hard for restaurants to survive, and a lot of restaurants have seen more support from local people than they ever imagined they possibly could. And I think it kind of shows that, like with everything, there's two sides to things in life. It's about how you approach it. I'm sure over on Maui, the support for Tin Roof and your staff and everybody has been quite phenomenal.
Oh, it's been amazing. We couldn't have done it without our community and, our neighbors and the people who are right there with you every day living here. And, yeah, we cannot thank them enough. And they've been able to keep my staff on and give them a livelihood. And it's all because of, like what you said, the neighborhood and our community.
So that leads us very easily into your cookbook, Cook Real Hawaii. It's going to come out in just less than 2 months' time. Sheldon, I have to tell you, I got a digital copy of this book. I sat down with it. It's so beautiful. It is, to me, it's the quintessential book that finally describes what Hawaii food is all about. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. You know, we worked so hard on it. And, you know, like the title, you know, it's kind of jarring. where we put the word real into it, but it's true. We put our hearts and souls in it, and we really wanted to showcase the uniqueness and how special Hawaii is with its people and its cuisine.
I think what, apart from the fact that the photography is just stunning, I mean, because it's photographs, it's vignettes, it's photos of, I think there's one picture that struck me that everybody wants to be at the table. There's a picture of a typical potluck, and you just kind of gaze into that picture and think, okay, that's Hawaii. Anyone who knows Hawaii, that is happening at homes all over, I mean, pre-COVID, obviously. But that's the thing. Obviously, getting that sense of Hawaii into every page was really important for you.
Yeah, I think a lot of, well, visitors in general, they come to Hawaii and they don't get to see an insight of what is we're eating at home. You know, like the restaurant, when you come and dine at the restaurants, that's just a small smidget of what Hawaii cuisine is. The true depth of it is in the garages, in the dining rooms of homes, and the back patio, and those moments that we spend with our family. And yeah, we tried to capture all of that and keep it really raw. And I think that the beautiness was in that, is seeing the realness of it and inviting people right into our home. That photo, I think, that you're talking about, is right there in my parents' garage, where we had countless memories of that. You know, that was every weekend practically. It felt like we were so blessed to grow up and have family around and have a spread like that.
And really, that's how you began to cook, isn't it? I mean, it was before you started your formal training when you went to Leeward Community College. You were really learning by osmosis. You were learning because your parents would say, go help wash up, go help us cut up a chicken. I mean, you started to learn at such an early age that it was really natural.
That's totally it. And, you know, like our home was the gathering spot, so all the holidays were spent there, you know, birthdays and celebrations, New Year's Eve, and all of that. It was all spent at our home. So the weekends were definitely moments where me and my brother were up in the morning early and helping out around the stove with my parents. And yeah, I was lucky. Transition into a chef because of my upbringing.
I heard you say, or I read you had said at one point, that cooking for a family, specifically cooking for a birthday party, was to you more of a joy and more important than, for example, cooking at the finest dinner in New York City.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. The honor to cook at the James Beard House was a notch in the belt that I'll forever be thankful for. But for me, the personal, to be asked to cook for someone's first baby birthday party or someone's wedding, you know, is that just like that's special to me. That's like the highest honor for me to be able to share what I have. You know, my God had gifted me with something, and I get to share it with my friends and my family. So yeah, that's the highest honor in my opinion.
and trust me, we're all really lucky that you're sharing it with all of us. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Chef Sheldon Simeon this morning. His new cookbook, Cook Real Hawaii, is out in March. You can pre-order this gorgeous book, and I'm going to give you the link for that. We're going to put it on our Radio Mojo Hawaii page. We'll put it on our website, and we'll put it on social media so you know where you can go and pre-order. I already pre-ordered mine. It really is the most beautiful cookbook. For those of you who love to read stories along with recipes and look at gorgeous pictures, honestly, Sheldon, I haven't seen a more beautiful Hawaii book that tells the story of Hawaii food. And I'll tell you what struck me about it and what I loved the most is that ever since I came to Hawaii from Scotland, people have talked about, oh, Hawaii is this big melting pot. And I got really sort of I thought that phrase got so overused because I heard it so much when I first came, and I was like, what do you mean a melting pot? You don't all throw your food into the same pot. You all have these incredible dishes that come together to make up many more incredible dishes. And I think that's exactly what you're saying and showing in your book, that all of the elements of the people who've influenced Hawaii have brought something that adds and makes the sum of the parts even more.
That's totally correct. And, you know, it's amazing that we can celebrate each other's celebrations and cultures, and it, you know, and let it be part of ours. It's so amazing. And like one of my favorite questions when I go out to like the high schools and talk to the kids and stuff, and like first thing, who has kimchi in the refrigerator? And I'm looking out into a diverse classroom, and then there's maybe one Korean kid out there, but everyone raises their hand that they have, you know, kimchi in their refrigerator. It's just like we celebrate each other's cultures, and we're so happy to be living here in Hawaii that everyone has their own little additive to the bowl of salad, that everyone has the crunch, the salty, the sour, all of that stuff. And I'm glad we could showcase it in this book.
How long did this book take you? Because just the storytelling alone is, you know, you're weaving your life story so far into the book in, I have to say, a very unpretentious, very real way. I'm really glad you put that word in your book, real, because every single thing about this is real. But how long did it take you to do it? Because the recipes are fairly comprehensive. There's a lot of recipes that people will recognize. There's many that they'll be so glad they finally are able to make. But this has been a long time in the making, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's a project that definitely took up a while, alongside with you know, co-author Garrett Snyder, who was just amazing of being able to come in and just like document it all alongside with me. And it was a project that took about 2.5 years in the making, and it was just like countless nights of going back and forth. And, oof, man, we could write a, we wanted to write an encyclopedia where there are so many things that we could still share, but we really wanted people to cook out of the book and really utilize it, just really bring it into their homes. And on, yes, it's a gorgeous book. Kevin Miyazaki did the photographs for it, and it's a beautiful book that someone can put on their coffee table and be amazed by the photos and the stories and all of that. But the recipes, I want people to be able to share it and try it out. And we worked really, really hard on this.
This is not going to be a book that people leave on their coffee tables, I'm sure of it. This is going to be a book that you can go into someone's house and know what they've been cooking, because there'll be splatter marks all over the favorite recipe pages. It's absolutely beautiful. We are going to give you the link so that you can pre-order this book. So if you have foodies in your life, and if you have someone who just loves cooking, then this book is great. Sheldon, I've seen a lot of cookbooks come out in Hawaii over the past 28 years or however long I've been here, a really long time. And this one is the best by far. And I'm predicting that you are an award-winning cookbook author by the end of the year. Oh. I think it's just magnificent. Well done.
Well, that's rather kind of you, Joe. And, you know, this is something that we're so proud about, that the recipes, you know, what we found out about the recipes is that a lot of the recipes were translated from all of these families just by memory, you know, so that's why it kind of changed here in Hawaii. And now to have all these recipes documented and written down and be able to share it with my friends and my family, it's a beautiful thing. So thank you for your kind words. We're excited for it. I can't wait till March to get it in everyone's hands and see everyone start cooking from the book.
Did you sort of take a journey, a culinary journey, around friends and family and friends of friends to get some of the recipes? Because there are recipes in here that, you know, I mean, for me, I'm seeing some of them for the very first time. They're very in-depth. The description of them are it's easy to follow, but you've put a lot of work into it. Where did you collect all of the recipes?
You know, it's been really a goal of mine as a chef in these last few years of really, really finding the soul of these recipes and these dishes. And it's been an amazing journey to have these conversations with aunts and uncles and neighborhood heroes, community heroes, going back to the Philippines to find recipes that my family and the region that they came from. And, you know, it's all of these influences that sprinkle itself into my food. And forever evolving as a chef, forever learning, and always curious of seeing, you know, the real flavor is definitely everything, but when you get to the depth and the story and the history of it, that's where the soul is, and you taste that. You can taste that when it's in the food. So it's definitely been, it's a lifelong journey for me, finding out the history of our food here in Hawaii.
Yeah, it's a beautiful journey, and it's just beautifully documented. It's almost like going to become a history book, this, I think, because it just tells such a great, and as I said earlier, really unpretentious story in a very real way. Sheldon, one of the dishes of yours that I think instantly gets people, even if they haven't tasted it, like maybe a year or so ago when I'd seen you and I'd been eating your food, I came home and I told my son Max, who is just crazy about local food, that you had a dish called bottom of the plate lunch salad, and his eyes just lit up. He just went, wow. Like, people can instantly taste that. I mean, people listening to us right now, driving in their cars or at work at the computer, can taste the bottom of the plate lunch. Is yeah. that one of the dishes that you think tells a story about you and how your thinking works?
Yeah, it's amazing that we can take something so so simple and so humble, right? But knowing that that's hidden behind everything, something at the bottom of a plate lunch, we can celebrate that. And living in Hawaii, when you say that, everyone instantly connects with a memory. And that's what's special about that recipe, because everybody knows it. I love that your son, his eyes lit up and he got a memory jolted, because it is. It's special, and it can be something as simple as shredded cabbage on the bottom of a plate lunch that invokes memories of Hawaii. So,
exactly, yeah. and I think that's
countless stories and recipes throughout the book that showcase that. So.
I you're so right, and I think that what you've done in creating recipes like this and committing them to, you know, to a book is that people take those memories with them all over the world. Like, you know, when my son leaves Hawaii for a little bit and goes to Europe, anyone can say bottom of the plate lunch, and immediately he's back in Hawaii just through a taste memory. It's really magical, actually. Sheldon Simeon is the, of course, you all know him so well. We don't even mention Top Chef anymore, because it's like, well, you're just so beyond that. You're Hawaii's Top Chef. He is the owner of Tin Roof on Maui and, of course, Lineage. And his new book, Cook Real Hawaii, will be out March 30th. You can pre-order right now from a huge amount of sites. Amazon.com has it. We are going to post the link to a digital order, pre-order, and trust me, you want to get this book for anyone you love. It's a huge book. I mean, it's not a small cookbook, Sheldon. It's several hundred pages long. There's over 100 recipes in it. You must be breathing a sigh of relief in a way that is actually out and just about to hit the world.
Yeah, it's been a work of love, for sure. of doing this. And, yeah, March 30th, that's a big day. And I hope everyone goes out to pre-order it and get their copy ready because...
And even just... I can guarantee that just the photographs alone you're going to love. I could talk you through all of my favorites, but I won't because you can go and find them for yourself. But along with the one, you know, inside Sheldon's parents' garage where they're gathering for potluck, my next favorite picture is one of inside of a true local pantry, and it is just a great picture. Sheldon, well done. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. I know you're really busy. We really appreciate it, and best of luck with the launch of the book on March 30th.
Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you for having me. Thank you, everyone.
Our pleasure. Sheldon Simeon, who is, of course, chef owner of Tin Roof on Maui. If you've lucky enough to have been over to Tin Roof and stood in line, which is really fun in itself, to eat his food, then you'll know what all the excitement is about. We're going to post this link for you. I'm going to give it to you when we come back. Stay with us. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
The new Michelin silicone plates last through everything.
On a world record-breaking drive from Alaska to South America in unpredictable conditions.
Thunderstorms, ice storms, they just don't quit.
Rainier Zeidlo chose Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades with advanced quad-tech four-layer coated silicone that repels water, snow, and ice and lasts two times longer than other blades.
It's coming down in sheets.
Real-world proven. Extreme weather wiping performance. Upgrade to Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades today. Only at Walmart.
Subscribe to ESPN Honolulu's e-newsletter and get all the local and national sports headlines, features, and the weekly play-by-play schedule right at your fingertips. You'll also be the first to know about our latest contests and giveaways. Sign up today at ESPNHonolulu.com.
Sports fans, get to Rivals Sports Lounge in the Waikiki Malia by Outrigger. Catch your sports on DirecTV sports packages. See the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl on 12 4K screens. Enjoy local beer on tap and a big variety of liquor. Whack our famous wings and slice of Waikiki pizza. We follow state and CDC guidelines for your safety, which means less people, so there's more space for you and great service. Rivals Sports Lounge in the Waikiki Malia by Outrigger.
With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is like the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Kind of like choosing Charles Barkley in a pickup game.
We'll take Barkley.
Ha! First pick! Sorry, kids!
Yep, even easier than that. And with our top-rated app, you can bank anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision.
Okay, here's the plan. Pass me the ball every time.
This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
New consumer accounts only. Approval required. Terms apply. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Play the playoff edition of ESPN Honolulu's Pigskin Picks for your chance to win local and national prizes. This week's Hawaii winner will receive a $100 gift certificate from Island Sportswear and Windward Mall. The grand prize at the end of the season is a Las Vegas trip from Vacations Hawaii. Go to ESPNHonolulu.com for rules and details. It's free to play. ESPN Honolulu's Pigskin Picks is presented by M. Dyer Global, Orthopedic Associates, Hawaii Building and Construction Trades Council, Spectrum Mobile, Woodcraft Hawaii, and Hardware Hawaii.
You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu, 92.7 FM and 1420 AM.
Morning. You guys are going to love this. We're talking a little of some people's passion, some people's favorite things, some people's guilty pleasure. We're talking about chocolate this morning. Dylan Butterbaugh is the founder of the Manoa Chocolate Company, and he's joining us. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming out. It's all of those things, right? Guilty pleasures, addiction, joy of life.
Yeah, it's one of the better addictions,
brain,
I think.
How did Manoa Chocolate Company come about?
Well, I was at the University of Hawaii, and my friend had gotten the job studying the plant. And so I was introduced on the ag side. And so I'd go hang out in this lab that specialized in different agriculture products, and I'd help set up microferments for cacao, which is the fruit of chocolate. And so after we'd do these micro ferments, we'd end up making chocolate on a really small scale. And I was just fascinated by the process of taking it all the way from the agriculture side to a finished chocolate bar where we were able to add value to it. So,
which is quite difficult in agriculture because that's one of the biggest problems is producing a retail product that you can do consistently and in quantity.
Yes, and it only works in Hawaii if you're able to add the value to it somehow so you can sell the end product. Like if you're trying to sell potatoes, it's going to be very difficult. Or if you're going to try and sell sugar, it's going to be very difficult. But if you sell rum, it's going to actually work.
Right.
So that's what we're doing. Essentially, it's kind of like the Napa Valley concept where you've got a lot of people growing grapes, but they're not selling grapes so much. They're selling finished bottles of wine.
Of course. Yeah. So what was it that, when you first started, what was it that surprised you about it? I mean, you'd gone into sort of the theory of it.
Yes,
and then,
that's a great question.
What was the thing that you were just like, whoa, I didn't know?
Okay, so a funny story is that before I was around 23 years old and I stumbled into this lab, I didn't like chocolate. But I didn't realize what good chocolate was. And so I thought a Hershey bar was chocolate. It's the last thing that was left in my Halloween basket. And so I went into this lab and my friend gave me this piece of chocolate and I tried it and it was really good. It was like a 70% dark chocolate. The beans came from Oahu, from Waialua. And I was like, oh my God, Dan, how did you get this cherry flavor in there? And he's like, uh-uh, it's the ferment. It's the wild yeast and bacteria. It's the genetics of the cacao. And so that really opened my eyes to what chocolate could be. And it was the first time I'd had good chocolate. And so from there, I realized, okay, this is super cool. I need to learn more.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because you're quite right. Like, when I first came to America, I couldn't believe the quality of the... Oh, it's not really chocolate, actually, a lot of... I mean, it's so
yeah,
little.
It's debatable.
We won't be rude. But it's just a completely different product. And then when you take something that's grown here so locally, so you've got that whole kind of just sort of sustainable element to it. It just elevates.
You hit on a good niche there. So we're a niche within a niche. So we're in the craft chocolate world. So right when I got into this around 2010, it was the beginning of when people were starting to make chocolate on a smaller scale with better quality raw materials, so better beans mainly. Mm-hmm. Whereas most chocolate's this mass-produced industrial process where people add a lot of milk and sugar, so you're not really tasting the beans so much. And so we're doing craft chocolate, and then we're also in Hawaii, so we're the only state that can grow it. Mm-hmm. So we're able to take these cacao trees and then do our own ferment and drying and post-harvest handling and end up with a much better connection to the farming side of it, which I think has made us it's been an advantage to making better chocolate.
And I think too, like whenever people comment and say, oh my gosh, it seems so expensive, I always tell them it's not even like for like product. You're buying something here that's grown, sustainable, super high quality. You hardly need to eat more than two pieces of it to get your chocolate fix. The value in a bar of locally grown chocolate, I think, is evident. Do you come across that a little bit? People ask about the price point.
Sure. It's education, though, mm-hmm. like everything. And it's all the raw materials we're starting with. So there's two parts of it. One is we're paying a lot more for better beans. In most cases, I'll use a wine analogy again. You could take a mechanical harvester, and it's going to just shake off the rotten grapes and the underripe grapes and all kinds of sticks and whatnot, and that's all going to kind of get processed into a field blend of wine. We're not trying to make box wine. You have your premium chateau and then you got your box wine. We're trying to do the premium chateau. We're trying to make the very best chocolate in the world instead of trying to add a lot of milk and sugar to a cacao seed that's probably moldy or rancid in some way. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you're doing with, and I think it's going to help a lot with educating people about how awesome chocolate can be, is that you have come up with a really interesting partnership with another local producer. You are producing a chocolate bar that is whiskey-based. Tell us about that.
We started doing an experimental project with Kohana Rum, which is a distillery in Kunia, where they would soak our nibs in their rum for about a month, and then they'd give us our nibs back and we'd turn it into chocolate. And then we realized, oh my gosh, this tastes like sugarcane and has beautiful rum flavors, but without the bite of the alcohol, which some people don't want. And so we were really excited about it. And then I met Eric and Ian and we figured, shoot, let's try the same exact project. And the first test batch we did was across the board, everyone absolutely loved it. So we knew we were really onto something.
That's Eric and Ian, of course, of the Ko'olau Distillery. And we talked earlier with Eric a few weeks ago about Old Polly Road Whiskey. We mentioned that you were doing this collaboration. I just had some of that chocolate, Eric. It really is fantastic because you do, it's chocolate, it absolutely is this high quality, and right at the back, there's this little bit of, is that whiskey? It's really good. You must be really pleased with it.
Yeah, we're completely stoked the way it turned out. And I think we're continuing to refine the process. I think we're going to I think we're going to have an award-winning chocolate, you know, as we continue to refine and improve upon what we're doing.
It's not that easy to just produce something right off the bat. It tastes great. Do you think you just kind of have hit it out of the park with this because it's such a perfect marriage? Whiskey and chocolate, I mean, it's always been a beautiful kind of thing to pair, if you have the right whiskey, of course.
That's true. So you always hear scotch or whiskey and chocolate pairings. And so to figure out how to infuse the whiskey flavor was a little bit challenging, but we'd learned enough from the rum distillery that we had a good idea of the steps to take. Now, I think we're going to continue to get better and better at it and infuse more whiskey flavor with future batches. But it truly is a beautiful pairing where you get, I think, the most beautiful of the whiskey notes still in the chocolate.
And I like how they come at the end. You know, I think for some people, they might think, are you going to open a bar of chocolate and it tastes like a glass of whiskey?
Yeah,
it's chocolate first, right. Then whiskey.
Yeah, it's not like this cheesy type of chocolate bar where you're going to have this unpleasant, like, infused whiskey flavor. It's very balanced. You get the best of both the chocolate and the whiskey.
Is it commercially available? I know it's fairly new, but can we buy it in the stores?
Right now, you can just get it from us at Manoa Chocolate on our online store or here at the distillery.
Have you had a lot of people coming to the distillery asking already about it?
We have, and it's, I mean, immediately out the gate, it was quite a seller. So we're really happy with it. I mean, we're proud of it, and Manoa Chocolate is such a great story, and so to be able to collaborate with it, it's something that we're actually really proud of. So.
Oh, and I can just see all the Father's Day opportunities and the Christmas gifts and all of those times where you're just not quite sure what to get dad,
well,
brother,
you
whoever.
You nailed it, because that's what we did. We launched it on Father's Day. Uh-huh. So that was the first time we really released it.
It's awesome. And is it just called what is it called? What's the title of the chocolate bar?
Co'ola Distillery Whiskey.
It's old Polly.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, it's important to ask. We should grab a bar and have it sitting in front of me.
It's always good to know what the actual name is. That's why I ask.
Actually, you can find bars out there that say Co'ola Distillery Whiskey on them.
That was the first stamp we created.
And then, the brand that we really try to promote around here is Old Polly Road Whiskey. And we've been collaborating on artwork for a new package that's going to, it's actually beautiful. It's got some really cool artwork on it, and we're excited for that edition to come out.
This is really, I can tell this is a really synergistic project. You guys are having a lot of fun with it.
Oh,
so
totally.
You can find it on Co'ola Distillery website.
Yep.
Go look there, and Manoa
Chocolate website, as well as our store, and then the Co'ola Distillery itself also carries the bars.
Perfect. And soon to be in lots of stores near you, I'm sure. It was lovely to chat with you.
Yeah,
thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
All right, you guys, there you go. Marriage made in heaven for sure. Chocolate and whiskey. Couldn't be better than that. All right, we're going to go for a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Radio Mojo Plus.
This is Radio Mojo Plus on ESPN Honolulu.
Welcome back to Radio Mojo Plus. I'm Joe McGarry, plus Bobby Curran, here to bring you the best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. And if you want to know more about what we do and our work with restaurants, you can go check out our website, mojomcgarry.com. And if you want to hear the podcasts and see what you've been missing, then you can go to radiomojohawaii.com, or you can pick them up wherever you get your podcasts. They usually are up by Friday. Sometimes, if we're really good, they're up by Thursday. And this one with Sheldon Simeon and the links to pre-order his cookbook, which is out on March 30th, will be up, I hope, by the end of today. I'm going to put the link up on Instagram right now too. So if you follow us at Radio Mojo Hawaii, then you'll see the link to that cookbook. Bobby, that was just really fun for me because, as you know, I'm a bit of a cookbook nut. I mean, I like reading them for the stories as well as the recipes. And there's nothing, I've never seen a cookbook that I haven't been able to just dive into and tackle. I can tell you with this one, Max in particular is going to be in heaven because it's like unlocking the secret to a lot of truly local recipes and the stories behind them. It's just so great. So I'll stop raving about it now and we can talk about something else.
Well, I have a question.
Yes?
Because in your various travels, even over the holidays, are you getting a sense, in the industry generally, when people feel like they'll be fully back to in-person dining and at a level that's sustainable for the restaurants?
Such a tricky question, isn't it? What I am hearing is that people are getting some positive feedback from Rick Blangiarty. I think that the feeling is he seems to understand what restaurants are requiring, so that's very positive. I'm seeing that the restaurants that are continuing to move and change their menus and adapt, the ones that are primarily able to do takeout and dining outside are going to be able to continue the longest. I do think, though, that for some restaurants it's just been too long. And like we were saying with Bill Tobin a couple of weeks ago on the show, there's almost a fatigue among restaurants. So to answer your question, of course no one knows what is going to happen and when they will all be able to be back to normal. The question more is, how long can they hang on? How long can people keep working at the pace they're working at? Every restaurant owner I speak to just says, I'm so tired. I'm really tired. Right. They're exhausted. And I was in Waikiki on Monday for almost the entire day. And I can tell you, Waikiki is really still worrying. Predictions are from the hotel industry that it won't recover until mid-2023, which in itself is quite scary, but I do believe that their data is pretty accurate. And by recover, they don't mean that there's going to be 9 million people coming back. They mean that there will be a reasonable amount of tourism again. Right. We don't need, I don't think, 9 million people. Everyone at 10 million, we were all getting worried. But I think what's really worrying in Waikiki is, I mean, I walked from one end of Royal Hawaiian Center to the other. You were seeing just people who work there. I mean, right. In the food court and in the restaurants, there's a few local people, and then there's the people who work there. That's scary. I mean, that is really worrying. There's a new round of PPP coming out for restaurants, for business owners. That's going to help. But I just think it's the general, you know, it's the general feeling. It's the general, we've done so much.
It needs to come back at a higher level. I mean, I think clearly if these restaurants are going to be able to hang on, and especially the ones that need to hire a couple of more people so that...
Well, that's almost impossible because no one wants to come back to work. Yeah. So yesterday I was talking to three different restaurant owners, all of very well-known restaurants. They're struggling to get people back because even though the unemployment has gone down, the additional money, they're still getting $300 a week in addition to unemployment. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a line cook or someone who's working in the kitchen, no point in coming back to work. They can be off, you know, at the beach, having a great time, not working, and earning exactly the same amount of money. So, you know, until that's resolved, we have a staffing issue as well as a customer issue. Right. It's a massive problem. It really is. I just feel that our restaurants need to be applauded for the fact that they've soldiered on, and I mean soldiered, because it is like a war out there for them. We've seen restaurants closing. You know, even today, Real, a gastropub on Wailea Avenue, which was owned by Troy Tararatua, he sold that, and so, you know, new people full of, you know, vision and confidence are coming in. But, you know, that he was one of the people who did. That was his passion. That was his life. It was his dream to open up, you know, Brood and Real, and both of them have closed, along with almost 90 restaurants now we're up to having closed.
Wow,
that's
tough. Yep.
Yeah.
By the way, and I have some information for you. You'll find this interesting. I don't think I've ever had a chance to mention this to you.
Okay.
But when I worked at Channel...
You think I'm awesome?
I think that too. When I worked at Channel 13...
Yes.
I probably, in the course of with Jim and Rick, probably ate out, and Rick was the, you know, the GM, so he was the one picking up the checks. So I can tell you, he is actually a fairly sophisticated restaurant person.
Ooh,
he is
good
at ordering. He's a good tipper. He's all of the things you would want someone in the mayor's office, and this time, he's everything you would want in terms of someone understanding the restaurant deal.
Well, that's good to know. And maybe that's why he's being so responsive. I spoke to someone who meets regularly, weekly, with a group at the Chamber of Commerce yesterday, and they were saying that, you know, and usually they complain. You know, usually they're just very unhappy. And one of the things that I have a sort of perch at Chef Zone every Wednesday, as most people know, and I'm there just to be of help to the restaurant industry. One of the things that happens a lot is that people just come by and just load their complaints on me. So I just sit there and take them. It's fine. I'm happy to do it. And a big complaint a lot is about, you know, administration and people who aren't getting it. But I was really happy yesterday to hear that the meetings go well and that he is engaged and he does seem to be. And I know he's very involved with the rent relief program already. So I think that I think we're going in the right direction for restaurants, but we can't let our foot off the pedal. We've got to keep supporting them. We've got to keep buying, ordering from them. Keep, you know, follow them and find out their specials and go and get them and just keep it up. I do have some really good news, though. I can't break it this week, but I might be able to next week. That one of the most popular pop-up restaurants in Hawaii has found a home and will be opening a bricks and mortar restaurant.
Wow.
And I am dying to let everyone know who it is, but I can't. I'm sorry. I'll have to do it next week.
Next week is good. That's not, that's a wait you can manage.
This restaurant is so exciting that as soon as I saw the owners and met them and tasted their food, I was immediately reminded of the vibe I got when I first met the guys at the Pig and the Lady. Because they're doing something that is, they just believe in it, that it's unique. They have so many creative ideas about this one kind of dish. And I think they're going to be phenomenally successful in their own restaurant. And I'm just really, I'm really honored, actually, to have been able to help them a little bit on their journey. But when we break the news, they promised me that they're going to come on the show with us next week.
Oh, great.
When their lease is signed.
Very cool.
And we will tell you who they are and we will talk to them and we'll break it here. But it's going to be exciting. And they will have a line along.
Out the door.
Oh, they will have a line at the door. And you will see it because they're going to be in a very visible location.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be really good. We're all excited. Even the landlord is excited. All right. Thank you so much to you, Bobby, obviously, for being our plus today. And always thanks to Sheldon, Simeon, for joining us. And of course, thanks to Manoa Chocolate Company for telling us about their gorgeous whiskey chocolate bar. I'm Joe McGarry. We will see you next week on Radio Mojo Plus.